Are you ready to start?
I am, yes.
Okay, well, we'll start with the appellant. We'll revert back to Duluth, I hope. Relator, I should say.
Well, she went on mute. How are we going to let her know? Oh, there you go. Tell her she needs to move so we can see her.
Shouldn't put her on mute. Didn't see this coming. Lesson to self. Last time we do it on ITV.
Now she's muted and she can't.
I know. How do we get to Duluth now?
I'm not muted.
Oh, you're not muted?
If you move, we should be able to see you.
We should be able to see you then, though, and we don't see you.
Oh, you can't see me?
No.
There you go.
There we go. All right. I guess there's a bit of delay. I'm not sure why. All right. Let me call the case. The case is Nelson versus Quick Trip and Deed. Each attorney will have 15 minutes for argument. The appellant will have additional 5 minutes. The relator will have additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. You may begin when you're ready, and please identify yourself for the record.
Counsel, I'm going to stop you for a moment. There's a lot of background noise. Is there somebody near you shuffling papers, or is there somebody? Oh, stop. Thank you. It was very difficult to hear the attorney.
Could be the other side.
Thank you, Your Honor. Should I proceed?
Please do. Thank you. It's much better now. Counsel? Why, and first of all, and again, someone was shuffling papers. At the start of this argument, are you arguing that there should be a new hearing or that there shouldn't be a new hearing? What's your position?
We're requesting first that the unemployment judge's second decision be reversed.
Okay. All right, so you want reversal, if not reversal, a new hearing. My question on the new hearing and the statute you just read is, why would there be a new hearing when no effort was made by Quick Trip to show that it had good cause for not presenting any of this new information that was in the letter? Once again, whoever is shuffling papers near a microphone needs to stop. You might not appreciate it, but it's very loud, and it's making it very difficult to hear counsel.
I wonder if it's happening at Centennial.
I think it's at Centennial.
Yeah, I think it is.
Go ahead, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. The good cause provision that you're referencing would require the party to show good cause for not submitting the evidence at hearing. That wasn't shown and that wasn't raised because what happened here is the employer, Quick Trip, sent this letter with a number of allegations. I did not see the letter. You can see from document 4 that the notice of reconsideration, the second part of document 4, was sent. And so I responded to that saying, I don't see any additional evidence because all I saw was the actual pleading from the unemployment law judge. And then the judge issued the new decision, and then the remedy there was to file an appeal with your court.
Okay. Could you tell us, in your opinion, because I assume you've reviewed the record, could you kind of tell us what in the letter constitutes new evidence as compared to the evidentiary record?
Yes. There are a number of allegations contained within this May 30th letter in document 4. There are allegations about profit margins. There are allegations about what Ms. Nelson knew or didn't know. There are allegations about trainings. There are allegations about when Ms. Nelson would have, should have, could have reviewed these policies. There's a very important allegation that this change to the rewards program was discussed for months prior to Ms. Nelson's leave so that she was aware of that change. There were allegations about situations where fuel discounts were given without a coupon and when that would be okay. There were, again, these are policies that are not in the policy manual or otherwise in the record. And then it also includes an allegation that the store leader and district leader did not have the same concern with any other coworkers in stores. And then additional allegations, Your Honor, and one of our problems with this is that the subsequent decision from the unemployment law judge does not say what evidence was relied upon versus not. What you can see from the two decisions, which are, again, contained at Exhibits 3 and 6, are the unemployment law judge took out a number of findings from the initial decision and then added some additional findings in the subsequent decision. And that's important because we don't know why she did that. We know that she changed her mind about Ms. Nelson's credibility, but we don't know why. She indicates that she reviewed the transcript from the hearing and then she changed her mind on that, but again, we don't know why. And so,
why do you think the unemployment law judge changed her mind?
Because of the letter sent by Quick Trip and the additional allegations. And because that's new evidence, which by definition is meant to have some probative value, I think I said it in my brief, evidence that is submitted and received to prove or disprove the existence of an alleged fact, this must be evidence because it changed the unemployment law judge's mind. And additionally, the other problem is we don't know what the record is, and so respondent points out that the judge did indicate in her subsequent or amended decision that she knew or that she relied upon the record, but again, we don't know what that is. We don't know what was relied upon versus found. And so with respect to this additional evidence, Ms. Nelson deserved an opportunity to address these new allegations. Some of the statements in that letter were more argument than evidence, which I will freely admit to, but there was a lot of evidence in there. We don't know what value or weight the judge applied to it.
I understand that the statute uses the word evidence, but that's sort of an odd use because evidence has a meaning for legal practitioners. It's generally something that is offered and received at a proceeding. So I don't know how somebody would ever offer new evidence as part of a request for a reconsideration. So maybe evidence is a poor word to use, and perhaps what they're thinking more along the lines of this letter, a bunch of new factual assertions that haven't been proved and that weren't presented at the original hearing.
What we have, Your Honor, is the plain reading of the statute, however, which says that when a judge receives these additional allegations, factual allegations, that if it is likely to change the judge's initial conclusions, then there should be a new hearing.
Okay, in counsel, perhaps I wasn't clear. I'm not, even though this is technically not evidence, this letter, I think it still falls within the meaning of the statute because the word evidence in the statute does not reconcile easily with what we think of evidence. So no, this letter isn't technically evidence. It's not an exhibit. It wasn't received. But if that's the definition we're using, the statute wouldn't make any sense. You can't submit evidence with a letter. So I think evidence means something broader than what we typically think of. So factual assertions, documents. I just think you might have misunderstood my comments. I think the statements in this letter constitute new evidence as that term is used in the statute.
That may be, Your Honor. And so if the judge, in fact, did not assign significant or even minor probative value to these statements, or does the judge disregard them entirely, we should have been told. But we don't know. We know that she changed her mind in a major way on a number of big issues. And so if she had clarified, you know, I received this letter, and I considered QuickTrip's argument, and I read, you know, I reviewed the deposition transcript, but the problem is that if, in fact, this was not evidence, and the judge did not consider it in analyzing the truth of the case, then why would she have reviewed the deposition transcript with a different eye and came up with different conclusions? We don't know. We don't know. And that's one of the problems here. I think that's why the statute exists. This statute suggests that a new hearing should be ordered in a number of circumstances. And in fact, in this situation, our position is that it dictates.
Why does it dictate a new hearing if there's no showing by Quick Trip of good cause for failing to present the new evidence?
Oh, so that's subpart one.
Same requirement in subpart two.
Well, there's no good cause under subpart two. But our position is that subpart one also applies.
Oh, true enough.
And that there was no good cause showing, that's another reason why we should get a new hearing.
Well, if there's no good cause showing, isn't the remedy to have no new hearing?
If the judge had not relied upon any of the evidence, I think that would be...
Okay, let me ask it this way. What if a reasonable person looks at this letter and thinks, boy, this letter might have impacted the ULJ's subsequent review of relator's testimony and might have caused the unemployment law judge to change her mind about relator's credibility, suggesting that the letter was considered in a way it shouldn't have been considered under the plain language of the statute, why would the remedy then be to have a new hearing and start all over. Why wouldn't the remedy just be to reverse?
Well, Your Honor, again, our primary request is a reversal, but I think when we're talking about credibility issues, I think the court is meant to defer to the unemployment judge on those issues so that a new hearing could involve Ms. Nelson addressing these issues in person. You know, it was over the telephone, but that's the idea. Does that answer your question, Your Honor?
It does.
I'd like to address, with my remaining time, substantial evidence issue. I'm not going to go through the facts at issue, or the facts in detail, rather, but I would like to point out that the unemployment judge initially found that Ms. Nelson had not been aware of this change in rewards policy until after she'd been spoken to. And then when she received this additional letter, she went back and said, I didn't find her credible on that. And I think it's important because Mr. Hattenberger, who was the only employer representative to appear at hearing, specifically testified that Ms. Nelson did not know about it until afterwards. Additionally, the misconduct statute addresses intentional or purposely naughty conduct. And may I finish my sentence, Your Honor?
Counselor, you're actually done. You have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your
Honor. Respondent.
Good morning. May I begin?
Yes. You may proceed.
May it please the court? All right, thank you. My name is Carrie Phillips, and I represent the respondent, the Department of Employment and Economic Development. So under the Minnesota Unemployment Insurance Statute, the reconsideration is a procedure for an unemployment law judge to correct any factual or legal mistake in the decision or to order a new hearing when that is appropriate. The statute goes on to say that when a party files a request for reconsideration, the ULJ must do one of three things.
Counsel, I'm sorry to interrupt you. We're very familiar with the statute, even though I misquoted it. Could you tell me, do you believe that this letter from Quick Trip constitutes evidence within the meaning of 268.105 subdivision 2C?
I believe it does. I believe the letter does have new evidence in the letter. However, the ULJ did not rely on that new evidence in modifying her decision.
How do we know that?
Well, she specifically states in the decision that she determined that the first decision was factually and legally incorrect based upon the information available on the record.
Okay. So that, I understand that. But how do we know she didn't make that conclusion based on what she read in this letter? In other words, how do we know she didn't, well, we know she read this letter. And isn't it reasonable to assume that the contents of this letter might impact one's assessment of credibility when reviewing the record?
Yes, I think that's reasonable to assume that it may have impacted her assessment of credibility.
And the reason I ask that is, the specific reason the ULJ gave, I looked at the record, I reviewed her testimony, she's not credible, she's evasive, and wouldn't answer the questions. Well, that's how she was in the beginning, and yet in the beginning, the ULJ said she's credible and made all these facts findings to support that. Now all of a sudden, she's not credible based on the same testimony that we started with. It seems to me there is some logic to the notion that what tipped the scale were some of the allegations in this letter. And if that happened, is that a violation of 268.105C, which says the ULJ is not supposed to consider any new evidence except for the purposes of determining whether to hold a new hearing?
And I would say that she may have considered the arguments in that letter. ULJs can consider arguments. So to the extent that Quick Trip argued that Nelson was not credible, it was proper for the ULJ to consider that argument.
But can I tell you, I went through the letter looking to see if Quick Trip argued you should reverse your credibility determination because she's not credible. I don't see that argument. I see a lot of, we're very unhappy with your decision, it doesn't make sense, here's why, and a lot of new information presented in support of Quick Trip to support a conclusion that this is unemployment misconduct. It's not a letter that says, we think you need to reassess credibility because you missed this or that in her testimony, it's inconsistent with something in the record. That's problematic, isn't it?
I don't think so. I think, so reconsideration is a process for the unemployment law judge to review the entire record. So an unemployment law judge can listen to the hearing again. In this case, we don't know if the ULJ did that, but she had the opportunity to listen to the hearing and to look at the evidence kind of a little bit of time after the hearing has happened. So, when a ULJ first issues a decision, under federal guidelines, they're expected to get that decision out in a short amount of time, within a few days. Under reconsideration, this is a process where we don't have those same guidelines, and there's a little bit more time for the ULJ to read the decision, reflect on it, look at what the testimony was, and to evaluate, are these findings supported by reasonable evidence in the record? And sometimes ULJs in that process decide that they got it wrong the first time. It doesn't happen all the time, but it is something that happens sometimes when a ULJ on reconsideration determines that they got it wrong.
And that's fine, and that's the purpose of reconsideration. But isn't it true that getting it wrong in this case all comes down to that initial credibility determination? In other words, the reason the ULJ now says I got it wrong is because the ULJ originally said Relator was credible, believed her, and made findings based on her testimony. Then the ULJ said Relator's not credible and made findings that are inconsistent with her testimony. So it feels like it comes down to that credibility determination, right? I mean, is there anything else in the ULJ's order on reconsideration that supports a new position that has nothing to do with this reassessment of credibility?
I agree with you. I think it does come down to credibility. That's what the ULJ stated, and I agree with you. I think she reevaluated her credibility determination. She listened to the hearing, and I'm not sure that she did. I'm assuming she may have. She said she reviewed the testimony, so I'm assuming that she listened to the hearing again. And she reevaluated the credibility determination and determined that Nelson was not credible. So I do agree with you. It did all come down to credibility. And she, in the modified decision, she modified her credibility determination and she explained why she found Nelson's testimony to be not credible. And that determination is supported by the record. So for the credibility determination, the ULJ reasoned that her testimony on the standard practice at QuickTrip of giving these free discounts, that her testimony that everybody did this was evasive, and coupled with her admission that nobody in management told her to do this, led the ULJ to conclude that she knew or had reason to know that it was not appropriate to be giving everybody a 7-cent discount.
Why do we think the ULJ thought it was evasive the second time she listened to it, but not the first?
Well, I think just the being in a hearing and kind of trying to formulate questions while you're in a hearing, I think is maybe a different thought process than going back and listening to testimony after the hearing is over. You kind of have a different purpose in analyzing that testimony. In the hearing, the ULJ is trying to think of the next question, trying to determine what information she needs to make her decision. So, it's a different thought process for the ULJ.
And that's a very good answer. You're absolutely right. That's a very good answer. And if this were a case where the request for reconsideration simply said, we're not satisfied with the decision, we don't think she's credible, and then the ULJ did what you've described, I don't think I'd have any problems. But how do we assure ourselves that this letter from Quick Trip didn't pollute that review of the record, influence the review, or make it less than objective?
Of course, and to the extent that we can get in the ULJ's brain and determine that, of course we can't. But we can say that the new evidence in the Quick Trip submission, the things that counsel mentioned, such as profit margins, trainings, the actual new facts, none of those new facts are in the modified decision. Everything that's in the modified decision is in the record, in the testimony, in the exhibits. So none of those new facts that are stated in Quick Trip's request for reconsideration, none of those are in the decision.
But one of the things that's in the letter is we didn't have these problems with any other employees. She should have known that bottled drinks cost more than soft drinks, and we don't have these problems with other employees. I mean, don't those statements reasonably impact the ULJ's thinking when she goes back to read or listen to Relator's testimony a second time?
They may have. Okay. They may have influenced her reading of the testimony. I know that in reviewing the testimony, the employer's witness does testify that it was not common practice to give sevens at discounts when they weren't asked for, and that she knew this. That's what Hatton River testified. And he testified that other employees came to him and reported that she was doing this. So, I mean, there is testimony that it was not standard practice to do that, and that other employees reported her for doing that. So that evidence is in the record. To the extent that Quick Trip's statements in their letter influence the judge to put more weight on that, you know, I can't say, but the facts in the modified decision are supported by evidence in the record, and I can touch on some of that other evidence.
No, and I agree. I think the record does support the second decision. But I think it also supports the first decision. So, and the problem I'm having is with the process and whether there was proper process. Can you tell me this? Just bigger question I have. I thought it was unusual that the person who submitted this very strongly worded letter on behalf of Quick Trip is not a person who participated in the hearing or was a witness at the hearing. Is that often the case? I mean, I can imagine when you get a request for reconsideration from an attorney. But isn't it odd to have a situation where Quick Trip sends in one person to represent Quick Trip at the hearing, and then we get a letter from another person who wasn't at the hearing with a bunch of new information? Does this happen often?
It does. I mean, it does happen. It's not unusual. For a lot of matters, the person testifying is somebody with firsthand knowledge. In this case, you know, we had a store manager who was present at the end of Ms. Nelson's employment, so he was able to provide some testimony on what happened at the store. It looks like the person who submitted the letter is perhaps somebody from a human resource, report human resources. I'm not sure of her title, but it's not uncommon for a big company such as Quick Trip
to send in someone.
People, you know, submitting information on behalf of the employer for unemployment hearings like this.
I have another question, just because you're Deed's lawyer, so I'm hoping you'll know the answer to it. Well, and actually, it's specific to this case. Relator is complaining that she didn't get a copy of the request for reconsideration letter until after the decision has been made. And it looks like under the statute, well, notice must be provided of the right to obtain any comments or submissions provided by any other party regarding the request for reconsideration. So is the burden on Relator in this case to go and get the information from Quick Trip or to request it from Deed? How does that work?
So she got the notice,
right?
A request, and so on that notice it states if you would like documents that were submitted, you need to contact the department. So the burden was on Nelson to contact Deed,
and Deed would provide them, though. She doesn't have to go to Quick Trip to get a copy.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Deed would have provided them. Okay. I discussed the credibility assessment. I would just reiterate that there is evidence in the record that supports the finding that Nelson knew or should have known that it wasn't appropriate to give the 7-cent discount to anybody, including people who didn't ask for it. The policy in the record, the policy specifically identifies as theft using coupons or discounts in a fraudulent manner. The record supports that she was trained on this policy, and then she got the warning in November. The warning specifically stated, if you continue to give away products or we have reason to question your honesty, it will result in termination. So there is evidence showing that she was aware that Quick Trip took this policy seriously, that giving away products or discounts was not acceptable. So that finding is supported by evidence in the record. And finally, I would argue that her conduct does amount to employment misconduct under our statute. The violation was serious because Quick Trip considered it to be theft, and she had received that warning and was on notice of Quick Trip's position on that. So if the panel panel doesn't have any other questions for me, I will move on to my conclusion.
No, counsel. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The ULJ did not err by modifying the decision on reconsideration. The findings are supported by substantial evidence, and D respectfully asks that the court affirm the ULJ's modified decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Phillips. Relator, have any rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to first address this allegation of theft. This was not theft. Ms. Nelson did not benefit financially from any of these alleged transactions. She gave some beverages to law enforcement, and she rang up some discounts for customers. So I'd like to clarify that, because the word theft was mentioned in the respondent's brief, and that's not at all what happened here. Second, counsel mentioned the policy. The policy to which respondent is repeatedly referred to is actually for, it addresses coworkers, not customers, and I think that's important for the reason I just mentioned the theft provision. Next, I'd like to point out that counsel did agree that the letter, the May 30th, 2019 letter, was evidence, and that it did impact credibility. It seems that the argument is that it was a coincidence that the judge received this letter. And I won't go on except to point out that my client, when she finally saw that May 30th, 2019 letter from a woman she's never met or even spoken to with these allegations and had no opportunity to respond, I think that's the reason these statutes are enacted this way. And I think she does deserve an opportunity to respond, and that's why we have these procedural rules. With respect to the theory that there were no additions to the amended order, that may be true, but there were a lot of findings taken out. And it wasn't just on the basis of reviewing Ms. Nelson's testimony. It's clear that there were certain findings that were removed in direct response to this letter. Counsel also mentioned that the record was clear that it was not common practice to offer these discounts. Ms. Broker, Ms. Nelson's acquaintance and former co-worker, specifically testified on page 65 of the hearing transcript that some people did just offer it, and that she'd gone to other Quick Trips and had been offered it herself. And so there wasn't any discussion in the amended decision about change of heart on Ms. Broker's testimony, and so I wanted to point that out for the court. I think that's it, Your Honor.
All right.
You have questions?
Thank you.
No. Thank you, counsel. Thank you both. The matter will be taken under advisement. Opinion will issue within 90 days. And we are adjourned.